Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And we are back.
We're back.
We had a week off, but we are back to discuss persecution complex. But first, I need to make an announcement. I had an incredible time last month at the Samuel DeWitt Proctor Conference.
Okay.
It was a life-changing experience for
Wow.
me. And I do not like these type of things, but I've never been to Proctor.
Okay.
And now I never want to miss it.
Like, awesome.
It's really good. But anyway, while I was there, a few of us seminarians from different schools got together and we said, you know, we having a good time, you know, connecting here and networking and things like that. But there's no way for us to do this like nationally. Like, there's no, like, when I was in college, we had NSBE, you know what I'm saying, National right. Society of Black Engineers.
Right.
They got the National Society of Black Journalists, but, like, seminarians don't have this, and we really could use it. So we said, all right, well, let's look and see what's out there. Nothing was active that was out.
Okay.
Because that's the thing with organizations like this, when seminarians graduate, then they go on and do other things. And so we have a plan to address that and
okay.
start building a network. So we decided we're going to create the National Association of Black Seminarians and Alumni.
Awesome.
So that is one thing that I did not plan on doing this year, but it looks like it's happening.
Expanding your territory.
For any seminarians who have ever been to seminary or you're in there now, check the show notes for a link to the directory. That's how we're starting. We're building a directory, and then we're going to find a, we have a way for everyone to connect, network, and we have a social justice initiative coming up for this year because the census is coming, and we got some work that we need to do, and we're going to do it as a community. So for anyone who is interested in the National Association of Black Seminarians and Alumni, hit the show notes for the link. Join the directory.
That is huge. Very proud of you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, persecution complex.
Yeah.
All right. So, this came as a result of me just trying to figure out why is it that particularly American Christians claim persecution at the drop of a hat.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Christmas time and they want to say Merry Christmas or
right.
they want to avoid making cakes for somebody because they don't like who they sleep with.
I'm not laughing. But yes.
Right. Or they want to keep blacks out of schools
right.
and they're not allowed to do that. So persecution is the call.
Kind of on the tip of the
That's
tongue.
That's the rallying
right.
cry. And so I'm trying to figure out why this was.
Mm-hmm.
And so started reading, just sitting, thinking about it.
Okay.
And so that's this show. So we're going to talk about why Christians believe themselves to be persecuted.
Right.
Well, American Christians.
American Christians.
Okay. So one thing that makes sense is that the religion was born in persecution.
Yes.
So as Paul is writing, he's actively being persecuted. He started by persecuting other Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just what's going on in the shadow of the Roman Empire.
Right.
So no one else can be king. You have this man that you want to elevate as king of something that maybe some people don't understand. And so they had to develop or grow in secret. So
mm-hmm.
they're in house churches. They're moving things around. They're writing letters and sending them in code and things like that. And so there's this specter of persecution that hangs over the New Testament.
Right.
And you see it throughout the scriptures.
Right.
And so some of these scriptures are the scriptures that American Christians or Christians in general draw from to point to and say, yes, that's what Jesus said was going to happen.
Right.
So for instance, Matthew 5:10, blessed are those, and this is part of the Beatitudes, so this is a Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
That's a empowering verse, and you want to be in that blessed group.
Right.
You want the kingdom of heaven, so you must accept the cost.
Yeah, the bad treatment.
Right, of the persecution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that I can see. I mean, you can see this as you read.
Right.
There's a lot of persecution in the New Testament, and that's because that's what was happening while it was being written.
Right.
Also, as the New Testament spread and the church fathers entered the picture, and you start to get martyrs. So
mm-hmm.
you have martyrs in the New Testament. You have Stephen, right. you have James, you have all of the disciples were martyred.
Mm-hmm.
They were executed.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, you got Polycarp, who was a prolific writer, who was martyred. You got Justin Martyr, who was also mm-hmm. martyred. That's how his name's not really Martyr. They called him Justin Martyr because he... So anyway, it became almost a badge of honor that you would stand for your faith in a situation with, where the cost was highest.
Right. But it's not just the example of the disciples or the early followers of Christianity. It's also the example of Christ himself mm-hmm. that people draw from. That here is this blameless, sinless man that still runs afoul of a government, a power structure that does not want to negotiate and only wants to remove the threat of his power, his perceived power. So his example is probably of the most powerful mm-hmm. that sits on, you know, somebody's mental perspective or somebody's perspective, mm-hmm. rather, that part of being an active or effective Christian is that something or someone comes against you in persecution.
Right. That's it comes a measure of how faithful you are.
Exactly. If nothing's happening to you, you ain't doing right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you hear that in church. The devil ain't bothering you. So is this persecution the things that American Christians are dealing with? What I see is a lot of community persecution. Christians in China are persecuted.
Mm-hmm.
And that is internalized and saying, see, they're persecuting Christians. That's what they want to do
right
with us here.
Right.
Syria or in Muslim countries where Christians are persecuted, it's the same type of thing. The most heavily persecuted areas for Christians in the world are China, Syria, Egypt, Iraq, Northeast Nigeria, and the Philippines.
Okay.
So those areas skew the numbers, and the result is 1 in 9 Christians are persecuted.
Mm, okay. Because they have higher instances.
Right.
Of these types of actions. Okay.
Right. So if you internalize that message and you're sitting in America and you're saying 1 in 9 of us could be persecuted.
Right.
It's not really the same.
No, not at all.
But the numbers are what they are.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the way the story is told, Christians are typically persecuted by empire, just like in the New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a predominantly Muslim country, the mm-hmm. empire is Islam.
Right.
And so they become the villains in the story.
Mm-hmm. But even this is not new. Historical context, the Crusades kind of cemented this, where European Christians, and we're jumping ahead, but mm-hmm. history says that European Christians, in an effort to somehow defend the faith,
mm-hmm.
Went as far as invading what we now know as the Middle East to somehow reclaim it for Christianity, because Islam was such a strong religion and continues to be
mm-hmm.
in the area. So because that provides the foundation of the spread of Christianity and the strengthening of Christianity throughout Europe, it is a reasonable next step to think that that idea of Christians in a certain group being persecuted, whether or not that can be proven or not, that mm-hmm. idea persists.
Mm-hmm.
So because if you look at that time, the Christians who went into the Middle East did not always win those wars.
Yeah.
So even now in 2019, 2020, we were talking a lot about Jerusalem and what it would mean to move the capital and recognize certain things in a contested area such as Jerusalem.
Yeah.
All of that is rooted in history, where there persists this idea of reclamation. Something has to be reclaimed for, let's say, God's kingdom on earth.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem is, and what we cannot dance around, is that we've identified that Christianity, to some extent, especially in America or Western countries, has been corrupted by other systems of hierarchies.
Right.
So we're talking about the collision. How does this persecution complex exist within a Christian perspective that also holds supremacy in a priority position? That's what we're talking about. We're not really talking about Christians being persecuted as a regular mode of business all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
What we are talking about is A, mistreatment exists in areas where they are not in the majority, mm-hmm. and they do not have the political power to affect a change on how their community is treated. So you don't have Christians having a strong, politically powerful community in places like China or Iraq or Egypt, places where we've identified that they are experiencing this mistreatment. But that does not equate to what we've experienced in, let's say, the Western Hemisphere, where we have the American version and then we have the Europeanized version of Christianity, where these things don't necessarily go together. So one incident of mistreatment can be blown up and stretched to cover many, many ills done on, let's say, what Christians might do to other groups. Mm-hmm. But one incident done by somebody else is grown to cover all of those ills. So we've seen this in the last, let's say, since 9/11, we've seen it. 9/11 continues to affect Americans' perception of themselves, regardless of religion. But look at all of the different policies and processes that changed that directly disenfranchised members of other religions.
Yeah.
It has been almost 20 years, yet these things persist.
Right.
No fly lists, discrimination based on religious garb. Black folk are familiar with it, but just even discrimination and just experiencing xenophobia in your community. Mm-hmm. We don't want you here. We don't want you to build mosques. We're good Americans. Mm-hmm. You aren't American, even though a person, we have freedom of religion here,
right.
and we have freedom from it, but people manipulate
yeah.
the meanings of things to almost make it seem like, no, only Christians are free.
Right.
to operate in this environment, as opposed to what I think the true spirit of the documents and the true spirit of our Constitution is, which is that we're all free to operate.
Yeah, I mean, since 9/11, 480,000 Muslims have been killed in conflict as a result of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Those numbers dwarf what's happening in terms of Christian martyrdom.
Exactly.
And, so, for instance, in 2018, 3,000 Christians were killed.
Mm-hmm.
So you raise a really good point about how power plays into the persecution. Can you be persecuted if you are in power?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens here is that, like you said, those in power amplify instances of persecution as they are persecuting other groups.
Yes, yes, most definitely.
And so that's where I got to thinking about this idea of masochism. And as I'm trying to figure out like how this works, like how this persecution complex works,
mm-hmm.
it works a lot like a masochistic idea. Like, so there's pleasure derived from the perceived persecution.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, one way is Christians believe, and this is according to the scriptures, in 2 Timothy chapter 3. It says, in the last days, perilous times will come. Paul is writing to Timothy. This is kind of Paul's last will and testament. Is he, as he's been persecuted throughout his life, and he's pointing Timothy to what's on the way, what has been. And he's saying all of these different forms of things will come in the last days. Men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, arrogant. This whole litany of things.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 7, he says, he's talking about people being led captive by silly women and stuff like, oh God, who are always being instructed and can never arrive at knowledge of the truth. Then in verse nine, so those people of corrupt mind and counterfeit faith who oppose the truth, but they will not make much progress because, as in the case of those two men, their folly will become pain to everyone. It goes on in verse 12. It says, indeed, all who want to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted.
Right.
And so the persecution acts as evidence that that Christians are close to the end. And the end is where the hope is positioned.
Mm-hmm.
So the more persecution that's present, hastened is the return of Jesus Christ.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, there's pleasure that's derived from that because there's the anticipation, like, you know, your kid, you go on a field trip to Kings of Maine, you can't sleep that night because
mm-hmm.
you're excited because you're going. The closer you get, the more excited you become. And so you invite the persecution because it's a barometer of salvation.
You're saying that the persecution is indicative of the end being near. I'm also saying that the persecution can be perceived as your closeness to God, because right. people are saying, I'm under attack, just like Christ was. Mm-hmm. And therefore, just like what this verse says, I must be living that godly life because right. I feel like you've come against me. But again, you know, does it pass the litmus test of really what persecution is? Mm-hmm. I do not believe, again, understanding that we have a capitalist Christian engagement here in this country that we have broadcast mm-hmm. all over the world. Mm-hmm. It is disingenuous to claim persecution when you are indeed the power player in the dynamic, mm-hmm. right? So just like we have policies on our jobs, when you talk about like a sexual harassment, right? Mm-hmm. Sexual harassment laws are written for the person who has the least amount of power in the interaction. Mm-hmm. So even if let's say it's a younger female coworker, and you know, like a classic thing, younger female coworker and an older male supervisor, and something inappropriate has happened, you err on the side of the judgment of the supervisor yeah. who should know better, as opposed to the new hire who might not understand the organization's culture yeah. or right. might not know how to navigate uncomfortable situations, might right. not know how to handle herself. The law is written to protect her in her naivete. The same way, you cannot claim to be persecuted when you wrote all the laws.
So Christopher Rodkey calls this the reverse revenge fantasy.
Okay.
And it's this idea that white evangelicalism imagines itself as the underdog. That's mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. While holding the power. That's two. It fantasizes about cruelty in such a way that the cognitive dissonance is downplayed. So as you were talking about earlier, you holding the cards and you're claiming persecution. You do realize it, or they do realize it.
Of course.
But in order to continue down the path, they have to minimize that dissonance.
Exactly. And it's not just white evangelicals. It is whomever finds themselves at the top of the hierarchy. For the snapshot of the situation. For surely, we are talking about the Black church and then marginalized communities within the Black community, mm-hmm. right? So it's not just us experiencing this when it comes to the collision between Christianity, capitalism, and white supremacy. It is also Black trans folks experiencing yep. this in the collision between the Black church and heterosexuality and gender roles or whatever, you know what I mean? So it's all relative to whom we're saying is really, you know, experiencing some sort of punishment or disadvantage. And the danger here is that it becomes its own echo chamber. Now you have people picking up the narrative that indeed the groups that are least likely to experience the state cracking down on them for their existence, okay, mm-hmm. are now saying that any concession of any of their privilege is the evidence of persecution. That's ridiculous. Not true.
It's ridiculous. I mean, to claim persecution on the basis of religion in this country for a Christian, you would have to overlook the fact that you're still a majority in the country. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You actually are the majority in the legislative bodies. Mm-hmm. You hold a majority on the judicial body. The laws will favor you greatly. So that's one thing you have to be aware of as you're doing this. Like, who's in power?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not being persecuted. I'm the one in the dominant group. There's no way.
Right.
If that were the case, then I could just change it. But that's where the masochism comes in, because you don't change it. You just like it. You just like to right. claim it.
Right.
And so as this keeps going on, the faith is almost misplaced. So there's been this decades long move to amass power
yep.
in the United States government by this group.
Yep.
You know, it started homeschooling. They're conditioned. Mm-hmm. They're training people to actually go mm-hmm. into these spaces. And so the faith then becomes misplaced, because it's no longer in God. It's in political systems or the systems that empower you. And what I was saying was, the irony is, the leader of this group, mm-hmm. Jesus,
mm-hmm.
says the meek will inherit the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Not those in power positions.
So you have to lie and say, I am truly the meek one.
Right.
But you're not. So, and there's a continuum at play, right? Because it is possible to exert this type of power over other communities while another group is exerting it on you.
Right.
Right. So in the case of, like, we've been very insightful and I think very sensitive to discussing the difference between Judaism mm-hmm. and Israel as a nation state. And it becomes important because you can critique one and not the other and should not earn the label of an anti-Semite,
yeah.
right? But when you critique Israel as the nation state and their response to the critique is anti-Semitism, that to me is an example mm-hmm. of obscuring the truth of the power dynamic, that Israel as the nation state, as the government, the secular government,
right.
let's say they have a set of policies and procedures that affect different people who come under their rule different ways. You should be able to critique that mm-hmm. without someone then saying that you hate Jews. That is disingenuous. But yet that behavior doesn't just happen in Israel. It doesn't just happen in, let's say, major cities, because then you'll come to a country like America and you'll see these examples where people truly do have anti-Semitic views,
right.
truly do set out to persecute Jews in their communities, in their spaces, their religious spaces. That is happening within a power dynamic that also sees people who are in that group support sometimes policies and events that render the same outcomes to different people. So it's the same with Black folk. We are experiencing something according to the harm and the disenfranchisement of supremacy, of white supremacy being in play. It does not stop us from turning around to members of our community
right.
who are vulnerable to that lack of power that they hold and then doing things to them.
Right. And we have to interrogate that, too, because yeah. one, where did you learn that? Two, why are you doing that?
Exactly.
If you know the burden of that oppression, to turn around and look for who can I exert that on next?
Right.
And oh, LGBTQ folks, yes, you. Women, right. oh, it's you.
It's a pass through, and it takes a lot to recalibrate that. These are the small revolutions, right? So individually, you have people who make choices who say, I don't want to be actively a part of anything that purposely harms mm-hmm. someone else. And it looks a certain type of way mm-hmm. in their life. But these are the small revolutions. The large revolutions are when you start getting things happening in aggregate. I'm leaving these types of churches, or I'm going to live a certain type of way. I'm going to vote a certain type of way. You know, I'm going to engage with my community in a way that pays the most respect to the most vulnerable. It is a completely different way to live. It is probably the most anti-capitalist thing you can do. Mm. It is the most Christian thing. But it is the most anti-capitalist thing you can do.
But if you do that, you have to acknowledge that you're not being persecuted. In fact, those people are being persecuted.
Yeah, and you're sharing.
We should do something about that.
I have all this power.
I should do something about that.
Maybe, you know, it's a novel idea. You know, we just watched someone invest of their personal wealth in a project that they wanted to see happen. It's neither here nor there that the project is, hey, I want to be president. Okay, fine. But they invested their personal wealth and I can't stop them from doing that. $700 million so far is the count. All things, you know, total. Mm-hmm. This person is not even going to make it to the convention. Okay. People say that $700 million could have been used a different way. This person has experienced power and power positions that he could have used his personal wealth to infuse and to jumpstart, and has used it. Like, let's be right. fair. He has used it in certain ways, but you look at this number, you say, oh my gosh, that would have been much better spent, you know, doing X, Y, and Z. It would be disingenuous for this person to say, I have experienced some level of unfairness because everybody didn't agree with me
right.
after I spent this money.
I don't think that that's the case. And the thing is, you spent $700 million and all you did was get punched in the mouth by Elizabeth Warren. You could have did that for free. Like, this, that's a waste of money. That money could have been...
punched you in the mouth for $400,000.
So as I'm thinking about this idea of persecution,
right,
with these folks around here that we can't get rid of and don't necessarily want to get rid of them.
No, like but we just want to speak truth to power about what's really going on.
So what type of hope is it for these people? I mean, they desire persecution. They act to invite persecution, meaning they discriminate against groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the discrimination is called out, they're being persecuted.
Yeah, you're attacking me.
Right. They are emboldened by the persecution that they created.
Yes.
And they see that persecution as a necessary precursor to their eventual hope.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you resolve that?
So we are in the position and posture of confronting, and it is uncomfortable to confront. But we are confronting just how much the structures of white supremacy have infected institutions, not least of which is the church. We continue to confront and interrogate and dismantle that. And really what you need to bring to that table is your courage and your bravery, because what you will soon find is that those structures have not been shored up by Christian faith. They have been shored up by the amassing of the power. So you would be naive to think that you could just pray your way out. Bring your prayers, but also bring your courage and your bravery, because these are the revolutions. This is, when we say we fight against principalities, this is what it is,
mm-hmm.
right? It's this infection of something that our social system, as we see through the lens of Christianity, has been infected by another social system. It's a social hierarchy that keeps people in power and fuels it with the hopelessness of those who are in the least strong position to change their situation.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot shrink from that. That is what we are constantly being called to do, just to be better people. And you got to keep doing that until it's enough of us that we repel it. We repel that infection in our own hearts, in our communities, in our schools, in our organizations. And it sounds like so much, but this is where you get hope from. Well, you know, where two or three are gathered. If I believe you're good enough and you believe I'm good enough, that's two. We go out and we find and we build coalitions, just like you were at your conference and y'all realize that there's no network
mm-hmm.
for you all to continue to share and encourage and shore each other up. So you built that. That is where we are. You have to constantly be willing to do the work of building. We have to build new structure. Right? The other thing is you have to tell the truth. Because more than a religious question, this is a question about empire. And we have to be clear about what empire is in power right now. It is not necessarily a Christian empire.
Right.
The empire that is threatening to fall is the one where Europe and that which is Eurocentered, that which is, that reflects Europe's power over the world over the last 2,000 years, this is the one that's getting ready. This is the one that's teetering.
That empire was built on the backs of black
and brown people.
Right. So people who are getting crushed by the empire, who have always afforded it the right to do mm-hmm. all of these wonderful things.
Yeah.
Wherever you find that. That's the empire.
That's the empire.
Because that system cannot continue.
But we've been chipping away at it. This is not new work. When this country came into formation, it did not come into formation without critique. How will you be a free nation and you enslave? This was one of the first questions and critiques of a new America. You want to start a country, and you're starting it from 13 individual perspectives of what it might mean to have this new country. And everybody wasn't on board. Why? Economics, plain and simple. Economics and personal freedom. And these ideas persist. We've already fought a war, so they're chinks in the armor, right? The Civil War really did happen. We can dispute why it happened. The truth of it is, it happened because of slavery and the economics of slavery. States' rights have never been that lucrative. okay, without being tied to an economy. So what did you want the right to do? And this forced your critique. There are chinks in the armor. We got free, right? People got free. And then immediately you change in the playing field. Now we have to worry about state sanctioned domestic terrorism to try to keep a lid on the idea of freedom. Now you talk about martyrs. Our community knows martyr. Mm-hmm. Our community knows that you will fell the leader, but you can't kill the idea, right? There are chinks in the armor. Just last month, we're celebrating our things. In the midst of all of this, we established our churches, we established our schools, we established our businesses, we established our communities, not least of which we established our marriages and our families. There are chinks in the armor, right? It's been in play because these things cannot be sustained. History says, whatever goes up, science says it. What goes up must come down. Mm-hmm. But the arc of history will show you, I can build an empire, and out of nowhere, the people who do not get to participate in it are the biggest threat to it. Can't be sustained.
Every empire has fallen.
Every empire has fallen. No one needs to take this personally. Every empire has fallen. Whatever we build after this one falls, if we do not take into account how empires fall, that will also come to an end.
If you keep building it on top of people, eventually those people get up.
Yeah, you can't guarantee that my grandchildren are going to get with this program mm-hmm. the way that my grandparents couldn't guarantee that I would get with it. Right? Because I didn't. You see what I mean? Yeah. So my grandparents and my great grandparents did certain things that led me to live in a society and a country whose leaders look different, whose laws look different, a country that was striving to be or at least appear to be more inclusive. I'm now in a knee-jerk environment. Maybe we went too far out and it made some people uncomfortable and their fears are on the forefront. Maybe not their best ideas. If you are bringing fear to any negotiating table, you have not brought your best self. Mm. So fear is not a power position from which to negotiate. Understand your oppressors are scared. So when you talk about this reverse revenge fantasy and theory, it has everything to do with the salt that is put in the game. I didn't put that salt there. Mm. The person who put the salt there knows the salt is there. They just don't know how they're going to get it back. Nobody wants to get back what they've put out. Trust me, this is just like when somebody commits murder and then they plead for their life. I'll plea out if you take the death penalty off the table. Imagine a whole class and group of persons saying, I know that I have killed, maimed, destroyed, murdered, raped, pillaged, disenfranchised, burned down, whatever. But if you would take all of that off the table, I'll cop to it. Mm. That's not a power position from which to negotiate. And the fact that we will not negotiate from a fear-based position, that in and of itself is inducing fear. And it's not grounded in anything except my noncompliance. I refuse to believe the bullshit you believe about your own persecution when I can prove my own.
So it isn't persecution. What it is you've positioned yourself unjustly at the expense of a lot of people.
A lot of people.
You've propped yourself up, and on your way down, you don't get to call that persecution.
You don't. And a lot of people are going to get hurt. A lot of people get hurt because you don't want this to sound like, first of all, this is not just a clearly race thing. Mm-mm. Have to be clear that it harms everyone to put these systems in place because it makes certain things too painful for some, and then it blocks people from pain that can actually grow them and realities that can actually help them for others. Mm-hmm. So when you're trying to rectify that, right, I don't want the person who longs for traditional ideas and traditional engagements in their community to feel like they shouldn't have that. I'm just saying that the idea that you were given that those traditions should survive over and above everybody else has actually harmed you. Mm-hmm. And it will hurt you to vacate that idea just like constantly seeing yourself in a position of being a victim, harms you. And when you vacate that idea, it might not be comfortable. We're going to bring balance back to this. And everybody should expect, it's like having something on your plate. It's the most nutritious thing, but it don't really taste good. That's the truth.
So that's what we're doing. We're telling the truth. And I'm glad you said it's not just a race thing, because men, anyone who has looked at a system of power and adopted it, it's going to be a problem. Your best option is to move away from it as soon as you can.
It's not an unrealistic ask, but you have to shy away from inflicting pain on others, thinking that that will not come back for you. It always comes back.
For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.